The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone. The views and opinions expressed are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder how Christians can defend fellow Christian and conservative Mel Gibson. Well, first I'll give you the short answer. I don't defend him. I don't defend him at all. I don't defend somebody just because they're conservative or just because they call themselves a Christian. I don't even know if Mel Gibson is a Christian. I don't know his heart. Being a Christian is a very personal relationship between yourself and Jesus. So no, I'm not here to defend him. However, that doesn't mean I won't discuss a certain hypocrisy where people foam at the mouth over Mel Gibson, but ignore the racist words of organizations such as the Black Panthers or even the once ethical NAACP. Yes, Mel Gibson is in the news again for another tirade loaded with bigoted words. Last time it was the Jews. Remember when he was arrested and started cussing out the cop and saying things about the Jews and calling the cop Jewish? The man publicly apologized and spent some time with a Jewish community in an attempt to make restitution. Now he finds himself in similar disfavor with African Americans. A recorded phone conversation, and we're not going to play this because I don't believe anybody should have played it, but because it's news, we're going to analyze it. A recorded phone conversation of Mr. Gibson yelling and screaming at his wife included the angry warning that her provocative physical appearance, she had some breast surgery done that he didn't like, her provocative physical appearance could result in her being raped by, and then to fill in the blank, he used the horrible N-word. Now, for anybody to use the N-word is inexcusable. That's rather obvious. I don't need to explain that to anybody. But there are other disturbing elements about this tragic news story, which should not be run over like a tractor by word farmers or whitewashed by the self-righteous. In this vein, allow me to put forth some questions that few in the media will be asking over the air. Question number one, do human beings have a right to privacy? The left screams about privacy when a woman wants to have an abortion. Does such privacy extend to other situations, or is it limited only to the killing of babies? Is a man entitled to keep a personal conversation personal? Does he have a right to assume it will not be recorded and then set loose over the internet? Would any of us want to be held to an unfortunate choice of words spoken in the heat of anger? Should we assume a difference between public speech that is well thought out with carefully chosen verbiage and the kind of volcanic lava that throws up out of our mouths in a private temper tantrum, things we may feel like pulling back at the very moment they expose themselves? Are media pundits salivating at a chance to go after Gibson simply because he is a conservative, and not just any conservative, but the very guy who directed The Passion? Hollywood doesn't want to forgive him for that. Are these same people defending the career of the late Senator Bob Byrd, who did far more than say something stupid and hateful in the middle of an argument with his wife? After all, Byrd had been a member of the Ku Klux Klan for many years, and it is simply amazing to listen to some of his defenders. My favorite comes from Bill Clinton, who explains that Byrd had to join the Klan in order to get elected and thus, later on, do a greater good for the public. Well, I'm not sure what kind of great good that guy ever did for the public, but even if he had, so the ends now justify the means? So much for the wisdom of an ex-president. That guy could defend Satan's temptation of Eve. Satan, after all, only wanted the poor woman to do a better job and get a better education. She had never taken Good and Evil 101, and the Tree of Knowledge offered her a special opportunity that a suppressive God had denied her. None of this excuses Mel Gibson. Let me say that again. None of this excuses Mel Gibson. It's just that those who are condemning the man don't talk with a great deal of credibility or consistency. At the end of the day, Gibson, sad and disturbed as the man may happen to be, affects nothing but our decision to watch or boycott his movies. That's it. And it really shouldn't be news at all. Unfortunately, a lot of other things are being said in the name of race, and they relate to all of us. They relate to the future of our country. The NAACP has issued a proclamation calling the Tea Party movement racist. I find this interesting. I find this very interesting indeed. You see, the Tea Party chapter, which I have had the most association with, where they actually have me come up and MC, takes place monthly in Ramona, California. It's run by an organization called Ramona Teed, T-E-A apostrophe D, a little play on words there. Their chairman is an African-American. But back to the NAACP and its sincere concern about racism in our country. Brief history lesson. My own people, the Jews, contributed significantly to the development and financing of the NAACP. They did this out of empathy, feeling a special affinity for a race who had suffered over the years in a similar manner to themselves. Out of gratitude, Jesse Jackson once referred to New York City as Jaime Town. I probably don't need to say much about Louis Farrakhan's speeches, filled with an anti-Semitism matched only by the rantings of Hitler, or Reverend Jeremiah Wright, who gave Farrakhan the Man of the Year Award. Maybe, instead of ignoring the diverse people groups who honestly make up our Tea Party movement, the NAACP should announce the Jew hatred by a growing number in the black community, fueled and led by so-called civil rights leaders. That would be a step of courage and a blow against genuine racism. The NAACP once stood for something proud and providential. Now it stands for National Attempt at Creating Polarization. But they don't create polarization as well as Obama does. And this is the president everybody said would bring people together. Supposedly, by electing him, our country was going to put racism behind us once and for all. Well, I'm reading from Fox News, July 6, 2010. In emotional and personal testimony, an ex-justice official who quit over the handling of a voter intimidation case against the new Black Panther Party accused his former employer of instructing attorneys in the Civil Rights Division to ignore cases that involve black defendants and white victims. Are you catching this, people? The Obama administration has instructed the Justice Department to ignore cases where black people are the defendants and white people are the victims. If you don't find this harrowing, I don't know what to say to you. If this doesn't send a chill up your spine, there's nothing to even talk about. Let me continue with this news story. J. Christian Adams, testifying Tuesday before the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, said that, quote unquote, over and over again, the department showed hostility toward these cases. He described the Black Panther case as one example of that. He defended the legitimacy of the suit and said his blood boiled when he heard a justice official claim the case wasn't solid. One such example of intimidation comes from Samir Shabazz, head of the Black Panthers chapter in Philadelphia. He can now be seen in a recently surfaced video holding a baton in front of a voting poll while explaining to a reporter that he was there for security. The video actually shows him calling for the murder of white babies. Let's listen in. The guy's a real charmer.
I hate white people. All of them. Every last iota of a cracker, I hate him. We didn't come out here to play today. There's too much serious business going on in the black community to be out here sliding through South Street with white, dirty, cracker whore f***s on our arm, and we call ourselves black men with African garb on. What the hell is wrong with you, black man? You had a doom day with a white girl on your damn arm. You want freedom? You're gonna have to kill some crackers. You're gonna have to kill some of their babies.
Quite a guy, isn't he? Well, this man and other Black Panthers were prosecuted originally by the Bush administration, but then, as you know, we changed administrations. Then Obama became president. And under Attorney General Eric Holder's leadership of the DOJ, our government dropped all charges. Sweet. Well, don't worry. Shabazz was held to some accountability. Here was the accountability. He's not allowed to carry a baton to a voting booth until 2012. Now, he can go to voting booths. He just can't go to any in Philadelphia. And when he goes to them, he can't carry a baton until the year 2012. 2012. That year seems to have kind of a ring to it. Now, don't tell me. Oh, yeah, it's the year Obama will run for re-election. Is this the Obama administration's idea of justice for all toward a man who calls for the death of babies? Lest we forget, this is the same exact Department of Justice which recently filed a lawsuit against Arizona. So let me see if I'm grasping the big picture. An intimidating thug who calls upon all black people to kill white people, including their babies, does not concern President Obama. But when police pull over a speeding car and ask for some kind of identification to prove that the driver is in our country legally, this does concern President Obama. Let me tell you something, folks. Any other president would have been impeached by now. I realize that impeachment can only take place when there are high crimes or misdemeanors, according to our Constitution. Well, I would say dropping the charges against one who calls for the death of babies qualifies at the very least as something a little bit above a misdemeanor, if not a high crime. I think that kind of destroys the future of our country when our law turns to that. But then Obama himself voted against the Illinois Infant Protection Act, which sought to discontinue hospital infanticide, not abortion, infanticide. And that was before he was president. We elected him president anyway. He's also gotten away since then with hiring self-professed communist Marxist czars and firing the CEOs of companies that were failing only because our liberal government ruined the economy by forcing banks to give out loans to people who did not qualify. The Obama administration also turned the other way when Acorn's criminal activity was proven beyond a shadow of a doubt. Perhaps that's because Acorn and the Black Panthers are in Obama's pocket. Babies and Arizona policemen are not in his pocket. And communists share Obama's desire for redistribution of wealth, which he was pretty public and vocal about when he ran for president. Capitalist CEOs merely share something with the rest of us, a love for the Constitution being shoved aside by the most destructive administration in American history. Anyway, it will never happen. We will not impeach him. If American citizens were to impeach the first African-American president, riots would inflame our land. Instead, we must strategize toward getting rid of him in 2012 by electing somebody else. Unfortunately, Acorn and the Black Panthers are also looking toward 2012. Well, cheer up. There's always hope. You need to be informed about what's going on, but there is always hope because ultimately our deliverance is going to come not from politicians, but from above. Americans are waking up and realizing Obama is not quite the Messiah they made him out to be. For myself, the man was never my Messiah. I already knew the true Messiah.
Just can't be said.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I should have gone into the weather service. I could have told you it would rain last Thursday, unsuspecting to the rest of you. Now, it did seem unlikely, being that we've had such a hot day and all. I think it was into the hundreds in Santee, where I live. Indeed, even after the rain finally arrived, as the initial drops hit the ground, I had to stand there and see it myself to believe it. They immediately evaporated. That ground wasn't getting wet at all. It evaporated, making the whole phenomenon difficult to believe, even while the water came down. How then did I know it would rain? Well, that morning I washed my car. Not much of a scientific basis, I agree. Then again, I had no data. And who else has no data? Well, I had as much data as those who predict global warming. People also ignore data about the law these days. A judge just ruled, now hold on to your seats, a judge just ruled that straight marriage is unconstitutional. Yes, you heard me correctly. Straight marriage is unconstitutional. These Christopher Columbus-style discoveries in our Constitution that others never found in over 200 years of American history are really quite astonishing. It's like panning for gold. Judges sift through our parent document, uncovering hidden sparkles of precious rock. I'm going to go out on a limb here. My guess is that this unconstitutional marriage would have been news to James Madison. But what did he know? He only wrote the Constitution. He didn't know how to interpret it. Well, don't worry. Conservatives are returning this fall. Let's just hope they don't wuss out. Let's hope Scott Brown, for example, is not a preview of things to come. Did you hear the news? This one was kind of buried. Scott Brown, along with two other Republican senators, broke ranks and voted for that big turkey financial reform bill. Oh, happy days are here again. Some 533 new, brand spanking new regulations will now start to strangle what's left of our financial institutions. But then Democratic Senator Chris Dodd says that, like the health care bill, we will not understand everything this new law accomplishes until it is enacted. Sweet. I'll just bet the unions are a little more excited than the banks, I have a feeling. In a previous article that I wrote for the San Diego Rostra, I expressed concern about Scott Brown. I wrote this article right after he got elected. I did not trust him. And although I was certainly happy to see a Republican elected from Massachusetts of all places, my gratitude was only cautiously optimistic. I'm going to read from my article for the San Diego Rostra, January 19th. 2010. This is what your old pal Bob had to say. Republicans are in near euphoria over the prospect of Scott Brown beating Martha Coakley in today's special Massachusetts election for the Senate seat vacated by Ted Kennedy. I share their enthusiasm, but only cautiously so. I watched this guy carefully in a Sean Hannity interview. Seldom did I hear a straight answer to any of Sean's questions. Brown went out of his way to criticize the Democrats who take their marching orders from Obama. That sounded fine, but he then went on to say that he would take his marching orders from nobody. Naturally, I can appreciate a man who thinks for himself with courageous independence. On the other hand, was that code for Don't expect me to cooperate with the Republicans too much. After all, I have those liberals and independents to also impress. In answer to Hannity's primary concern, namely a promise to block the fast-racing health care bill, Brown explained that we needed to go back to the drawing board, quote unquote. That can mean anything. The state senator from Massachusetts was not actually promising in so many words that he was against a health care bill, just this particular form of a health care bill. That is not much different than what many of the moderate Democrats were saying before they were bought off. I realize our country is set up to be governed by politicians. Nevertheless, how sad to think that at the end of the day, we may be sending nothing but another politician to Washington. That was from my article for San Diego Rostra in January, where I feared we were only sending out another politician. Well, we're on the subject today of politicians. I'm reading now from the Thomas More Center. See, I talked about senators so much, the word senator is still jumping out of my mouth. But what I meant to say was that I'm going to read from the Thomas More Center of Law. I'm reading from their homepage. This was a story that took place in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And it's huge. You won't hear about it in too many of the news channels, but it's huge, I'm telling you. It says this: in an unprecedented and astonishing development, the city of Dearborn, through its mayor and its official website, has personally attacked the four Christian missionaries arrested at the annual Arab International Festival on June 18, 2010. Now, let me tell you who was arrested. For many years on the Bob Siegel Show, we have had guests through an affiliation with Arabic Christian Perspective, a loving and dynamic Christian organization that loves Muslims and reaches out to them. They are willing to call Islam a violent religion, but they have a reason for that. The reason is that Islam is a violent religion, but they love Muslims. They reach out to Muslims, and now they got in trouble, and four of them got arrested because they were sharing the gospel with Muslims. I'll tell you more about this when we return. You don't want to miss this. This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm reading an article that you can find on the front page of the Thomas More Center of Law about four Christians who got arrested for daring to share the gospel with Muslims. This was in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And not only were they arrested and charged, but now this article is talking about the mayor making all kinds of comments about them. It says the mayor's intrusion into the case destroyed whatever semblance remained of an unbiased and professional law enforcement action following the illegal seizure of video cameras to prevent recording of the events surrounding the arrests. One of the Christian missionaries, Dr. Nabil Khurshai, MD, tore apart the mayor's five-page statement attacking the missionaries. Dr. Khurshai was engaged in a peaceful dialogue with several Muslim youths. The other three missionaries were merely videotaping the conversation when the Dearborn police moved in, seized the cameras, and then made arrests. The four Christian missionaries were arraigned on criminal charges on Monday morning, July 12th, in Dearborn's 19th Judicial District Court. All right, let me respond to this, people, because I fear for the future of our country if more people do not stand up soon to protest these kinds of outrageous actions. This arrest does not reflect any accurate understanding of the Establishment Clause, which merely speaks against mandated religion and does not forbid people from sharing their religious views in public, but it certainly does violate another part of the First Amendment, namely the right to freedom of speech. Remember freedom of speech? It's disappearing. Watch the Magic Act. Now, while we're on the subject, it's not as if Muslims do not openly share their faith. They do it all the time. I debated a Muslim who bragged about how he was led to Islam through a Muslim evangelist. American youth are converting to Islam in record numbers. So we need to discontinue the ignorant, inaccurate assumption that Christians are the only ones who proselytize. Now, generally speaking, city governments do not come out and admit their anti-Christian agenda. They instead cite things like blocking traffic, and that is some of the nonsense attempted in this Michigan case. The criminal charges have actually been very vague up to now. Well, next week, I'm going to have on the air every single one of these missionaries. They're going to be on the phone all at the same time. It's going to be a very important program. Make sure you don't miss it. Oh, I'll invite the mayor to come on too. I will. Anybody want to take some guesses as to whether or not he shows up? If I could put down money in Vegas, I'd make a bundle, but we will issue the invitation. One of my favorite film comedies is the 1968 hit Support Your Local Sheriff with the affable James Garner. I'm a huge James Garner fan. In one series of scenes, several hired gunslingers in a row try to gun down Garner unsuccessfully. He's the sheriff. They're trying to gun him down. They don't do it because he's the fastest draw anywhere. Well, one bright chipper morning when Garner sees yet another gunman coming, he says in frustration and annoyance, "I sure am getting sick of all this." Lately, those words have been my own sentiment toward the double standards plaguing not only our country, but our churches as well. The former is expected. The latter is inexcusable. But they both make me sick. Yeah, I sure am getting sick of all this. I'm sick of being told that those who want to keep marriage between a man and a woman or those who want to protect our borders are guilty of racism and hate, while those who truly serve an ideology of hatred, racism, anti-Semitism, and female suppression are defended because they are the religion of peace. I'm sick of hearing how the left is the party of choice because they allow abortion, all the while speaking against the right to choose your own schools, cars, radio shows, food, drink, or decisions on how to spend your own money. I'm sick of conservatives being labeled as bad for the unity of our country because they criticize President Obama, while liberals under Bush administration informed us how patriotic healthy dissent can be. Media pundit Bill Press recently spoke about this low time in our country due to the constant opposition to President Obama. But when Bush was president, Press complained so much his moving lips could have powered the entire state of New Jersey for a year. A year. Meanwhile, Obama continues calling Republicans the party of no for refusing to cooperate with his policies, knowing full well that when he was a senator, he and his fellow Democrats opposed George Bush at every turn. I mean, who are we kidding? I'm sick of Nancy Pelosi offering patronizing lectures on toning down the rhetoric. We need to tone down the rhetoric out of a fear that it could lead to violence, referring exclusively to people who protested her health care bill, while this same Pelosi remains conspicuously silent when Black Panthers call for the death of white babies. I'm sick of the left in general accusing the right of hate speech when their premier websites like Huffington Post and Daily Kos offer the most vile spewage ever to grace our land. I'm sick of hearing that it's wrong to call Obama a socialist when he himself literally campaigned on promises to redistribute wealth, hired communist Marxist czars, took over high portions of the bank and auto industry, placed a moratorium on offshore oil drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, and passed a monster law that regulates our healthcare industry. Newsweek, incidentally, ran a cover story saying, "We are all socialists now." That was perfectly fine with the liberals. But when a conservative says the same thing, he is guilty of hate speech. Of course. Of course. I'm sick of being told by liberals that the only objection people can possibly have toward Obama is his skin color, when these very same liberals literally pillaged the reputations of Condoleezza Rice and Clarence Thomas, who were defended, interestingly enough, by conservatives who supposedly cannot handle African Americans in power. I'm sick of being told by fellow Christians that it's against the character of Jesus to speak harshly about public figures, when this same Jesus was literally crucified for his willingness to speak harshly against public figures. I mean, who do you think had Jesus crucified? It was the public figures. I'm sick of being told by politicians that invoking Christianity in public discussions of gay marriage or abortion violates separation of church and state, while these exact same politicians inform us with a smile that Jesus would be all for illegal immigration. I hear you, Garner. I hear you. I sure am getting sick of all this. We need a new sheriff in town. I just don't care what his color is. If you'd like to weigh in on any of this, our call-in toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. That's 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach me through questions@bobsiegel.net, questions@bobsiegel.net, or you can reach me on Facebook, or you can reach me on Twitter. And Patty on Facebook says she likes my comments about the hypocrites that I'm getting sick and tired of. Maureen says, "I don't like this. I love it." Maureen also comments on the arrest of Christians in Michigan. She says, "Outraged? Yes. Shocked? No. Nothing surprises me these days. Last night on TV, there was some special on about Islam. I watched it for maybe 5 minutes. They were blaming the wars in Iran and Afghanistan for people's feelings toward Muslims being too negative." Yeah, well, that's how political correctness works, Maureen. Blame everybody for the crime but the criminal. One lady on Facebook this week in a dialogue with me said that maybe Muslim extremists hate us because we call them violent. Yeah, or maybe we call them violent because they are violent. Maybe we call them violent because they live by a book which tells them to conquer the world. That might be the reason, too. Projects don't just happen. Good projects are a result of a team of dedicated professionals, owners, architects, and contractors striving toward a common goal. Make OMP a part of your team. If you're looking for professional, knowledgeable experience for your construction project team, Oso Miller Pacific should be your first call. For over 20 years, Mark Miller has been providing project management and constructive services throughout San Diego and Southern California. As president of Oso Miller Pacific, Mark continues this tradition of providing the most professional services in the industry to the healthcare, commercial, and government construction markets. Oso Miller Pacific provides a full range of pre-construction services, including definition of needs, design team selection, concept budget generation, and construction services. This full range of services is what sets Oso Miller Pacific apart from its competition. Visit their website at osomillerpacific.com. That's www.osomillerpacific.com or call the offices at 619-449-0633. Again, the number is 619-449-0633. Good projects don't just happen. Call Oso Miller Pacific. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I've been reading some comments from Facebook. Maureen was commenting on several things I had to say. Regarding Mel Gibson, Maureen says, "Agreed totally. Why is this such a big deal when our so-called leaders do much worse?" Now, regarding the comments I made on last week's radio show about God revealing himself and how that fits with the reality of multiple religions, Jody says, I guess we will find out which is the right one when he gets here. I hope I'm right. And then she says, laughing out loud. Okay, so she's saying, someday when we die, we'll find out which religion is true. There's no way to find out before that. Well, I can understand that from your point of view, that might be one possibility. Jody, let me throw out another point of view. Maybe God cared enough about us to make himself known sooner than that. I'm convinced he did. I'm convinced he made himself known generation after generation, that it was recorded by history, and we call that book the Bible. Mike in Champaign, Illinois writes, I hadn't heard about the marriage ruling. He's talking about the ruling that straight marriage is unconstitutional. He says, who, when, where, etc. Very fair question, Mike. It's Judge Joseph Toro in Boston ruling in favor of gay couples' rights in a challenge to the 1996 Defense of Marriage Act, which claims that one state need not recognize the marriage of another state. In other words, if somebody gets married in a state like Massachusetts that allows gay marriage, and then they come to a state like California that doesn't allow it, California does not have to acknowledge that marriage. So Judge Toro argues that the law interferes with the right of states to define marriage. Now, I had to read that twice because, of course, the law does the opposite. The law says that they're not going to interfere. It says that one state need not recognize the marriage of another state. So Judge Toro is saying that's unconstitutional because it doesn't recognize the states. Doesn't this stuff just make your head spin? You've got to go to law school to interpret the law like that. And of course, California just did define marriage, and it's now being taken to federal court to have that overruled. So what about the state rights there? You see, that's how this wisdom works. States have a right to define marriage any way they want, so long as they define it in a politically correct manner consistent with the gay agenda. Well, last week, I began a discussion, and it was in response to the question, is Obama a Muslim? I told you that I think all this talk about Obama being a Muslim is a waste of time. If you're unhappy with Obama, there are so many things about him that you can prove. Why go after something elusive? And of course, so what if they did prove that he was a Muslim? Our politically correct culture thinks Islam's a great religion. If they proved that Obama was a Muslim, that would not be a problem with many people. Obama claims to be a Christian, and I take him at his word. I believe he thinks he's a Christian. But I also talked about the fact that at the turn of the 20th century, every major denomination split. We called it the liberal fundamentalist split. And we had a lot of liberal churches now. You can have a conservative Presbyterian church. You can have a liberal Presbyterian church. You could have conservative Methodist, liberal Methodist, conservative Baptist, liberal Baptist. I know the word liberal Baptist sounds like an oxymoron because Baptists are known as being so conservative, but there is a liberal Baptist denomination called the American Baptist. And so the days are over when you know what somebody believes based on what denomination they attend, which side, is it the liberal or the fundamental variety? Now, the fundamentalists went a little bit too far because the liberals were saying that we need to forget about things like sin nature, whether or not Christ rose from the dead, discussions of heaven and hell. They demythologized all of that, supposedly, because they thought it was a mythology. And they said, what we should do is just go out and feed the poor and take care of society and make society a better place. Now, here's the thing. The church had already been doing that. But now, the liberals were calling this the social gospel. And because the social gospel was all they believed in, the fundamentalists, meaning people that wanted to get back to the fundamentals, fundamentals like sin nature, fundamentals like forgiveness, fundamentals like resurrection and atonement, they kind of shied away from doing things to help society and make society a better place. Now, later on in the 1950s, I'm happy to say that people like Billy Graham sought a happier medium by creating an offshoot of the fundamentalists known as evangelicals. Evangelicals concede the church's obligation to make society a better place. Evangelicals believe that one can practice social reform without compromising the spiritual elements of the gospel. Today it gets a bit confusing because most people use the words fundamentalist and evangelical interchangeably. Many with a fundamentalist mentality call themselves evangelicals. Likewise, evangelicals claiming to believe in a literal interpretation of God's word are often labeled fundamentalists and are accused of being uninterested in the poor and the needy. One can grow up in a liberal church and still develop conservative doctrine. Anything is possible. And certainly Obama, like all of us, has been exposed to a wide barrage of teachings over the years. So we should certainly allow him to speak for himself about his own beliefs. Unfortunately, when he does speak for himself, my suspicions are only verified. During the election, while commenting on homosexuality and gay marriage, Obama said that he preferred the Sermon on the Mount to some obscure passage in Romans. Well, undoubtedly, the Roman passage in mind was Paul's condemnation of homosexuality. Obama was not clear which part of the Sermon on the Mount he was talking about. The Sermon on the Mount is found in Matthew chapters 5 through 7. So he wasn't clear which verse in particular he was referring to, but I'd like to offer a safe guess. I think he meant verses 7, 1 through 2, which contain that famous phrase, "Judge not, lest you be judged." This is the favorite Bible verse of many because they somehow think it grants them license to ignore all those other verses in the Bible. You know, the ones that condemn sin. The idea here is that Jesus' words somehow trump Paul's. Well, this displays a complete ignorance of the Bible. It also reveals affinity for the liberal theology so rampant in the World Council of Churches. And Obama's church, Trinity United, is a member of the World Council of Churches. First of all, Paul's words are anything but obscure. They could not possibly be more clear. Romans 1, 26 through 27, Paul says, "Because of this, God gave them over to shameful lusts. Even their women exchanged natural relations for unnatural ones. In the same way, the men also abandoned natural relations with women and were inflamed with lust for one another. Men committed indecent acts with other men and received in themselves the due penalty for their perversion." Now, that doesn't mean God hates homosexuals. That doesn't mean God doesn't love homosexuals. It just means that we're all guilty of sin. That's one of the sins. It's certainly not the only sin the Bible talks about, but it is one of them. How do Paul's words square with the teachings of Jesus? Well, it's true that our gospel accounts do not record Jesus speaking about homosexuality directly, but Jesus did confirm the divine inspiration of the Jewish holy scriptures, referred to in those days as the Law and the Prophets, and he insisted that the Israelites continue to honor God's law. In fact, Jesus taught this devotion to the law in the very Sermon on the Mount, which Obama claims to accept, and I'll show you where Jesus taught that devotion to the law when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's daily blog on townhall.com. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. BobSiegel.net.
This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com. President Obama said that only part of the Bible was inspired. Jesus' words in the Sermon on the Mount were more inspired than Paul's words in Romans. Well, by an amazing coincidence, Paul's words in Romans condemned homosexuality. And in Matthew, it says, judge not lest you be judged. But that's not all of what Matthew says. That's not even all of what the Sermon on the Mount says. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says the entire Old Testament is the Word of God. They didn't call it the Old Testament in those days. They called it the Law and the Prophets. Here's what Jesus said. I'm reading from Matthew 5, 17 through 20. Do not think that I have come to abolish the Law or the Prophets. I have not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them. I tell you the truth, until heaven and earth disappear, not the smallest letter, not the least stroke of a pen, will by any means disappear from the law until everything is accomplished. Anyone who breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Now follow this, people. Since Jesus was authenticating the entire law, that authentication included the specific law about homosexuality, which is found in Leviticus 18:22. Do not lie with a man as one lies with a woman. That is detestable. And so the Apostle Paul's teaching was no different than that of the Jewish law. Some still like to dismiss Paul because he was not one of Jesus' original disciples. That is true. But he encountered the resurrected Christ later on. You can read about that in Acts chapter 9. The original disciples were given a special authority by Jesus, but keep in mind that one of these authoritative disciples, Peter, later authenticated the words of Paul, even to the point of equating Paul's lectures with Scripture. I'm reading from 2 Peter 3:15 through 16. Bear in mind that our Lord's patience means salvation, just as our dear brother Paul also wrote you with the wisdom that God gave him. He writes the same way in all his letters, speaking in them of these matters. His letters contain some things that are hard to understand, which ignorant and unstable people distort, as they do the other scriptures, to their own destruction. Notice how he says the other scriptures. He's equating the words of Paul with Scripture. He's doing it very casually, almost without even thinking about it. Incidentally, the verse about judging gets taken out of context all too frequently. The Bible actually commands us to make judgments. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Paul was upset with the church of Corinth because they wouldn't judge. And Jesus was not forbidding the making of a judgment. He was forbidding self-righteous hypocrites who saw another person's sin but did not see their own sin. If we would first judge our own sin, we could also judge someone else's. Matthew 7, 1 through 5. He says, do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First, take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. See, we are allowed to remove the speck from our brother's eye. It's just that we have to remove our own log first. Is Obama a real Christian in the biblical sense of the term? Would Jesus view Obama as one of his true followers? Only God can see a man's heart. Only God knows how the man's going to fare on Judgment Day. Still, some pretty major clues have been offered, and so far we can safely conclude the following about Obama's Christianity. He attends a church that is part of the World Council of Churches, the liberal brand of Christianity that does not view the resurrection of Jesus as important. Neither does it emphasize sin. Conveniently, these churches tend to uphold any loose modern idea of morality and seem to have little place for biblical morality. They cherry-pick their doctrines and accept only the parts of the Bible that they like as being the real word of God. Obama himself demonstrates this by claiming that Jesus' words are more inspired than the rest of the Bible. But Jesus himself taught quite the opposite. He accepted the entire Old Testament, and he commissioned his disciples, who along with their disciples wrote the New Testament. Finally, Obama's specific church, or at least the one that he went to for 20 years, was a racist black supremacist organization which promotes the Nazi Louis Farrakhan. So just exactly what kind of Christianity does Obama truly adhere to? One can call himself a Christian and still have nothing to do with Jesus. My source for that provocative statement? Jesus. Since Obama likes the Sermon on the Mount, maybe we would do well to close this little talk from Jesus' own words found at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, and they're harrowing words. I'm reading from Matthew 7, 21 through 23, Jesus talking. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons and perform many miracles? Then I will tell them plainly, I never knew you. Away from me, you evil doers. And so people, it just doesn't matter whether or not Obama is a Muslim. What kind of Christianity is he talking about when he calls himself a Christian? And like I told you, if they could prove he was a Muslim, what have you proven? Islam supposedly is the religion of peace. Now, let me say, I believe there are peaceful Muslims in the world. I really do. And I'm not just saying that as obligatory politically correct drivel. I have met and conversed at length with many peaceful Muslims. Okay? But I'm also convinced that many of the so-called moderate Muslims, especially the media spokespeople, are not nearly as benign as they let on. You won't find a Muslim on radio or TV who embraces terrorism. They all renounce terrorism. We renounce it categorically. Categorically. But I have found that one very simple question reveals how these people truly feel. I call this question, how to cause a Muslim Freudian slip. I'm talking about the Israeli-Palestinian situation. 2 years ago, Muslim apologist Nadir Ahmad was a guest on my radio show right here on KCBQ. He renounced terrorism right at the beginning of the interview. When I asked him how he felt about Jimmy Carter encouraging Israel to make deals with Hamas, the terrorist organization bent on Israel's destruction, an organization elected into office by the Palestinians, when I asked him for his opinion of that, ooh, I heard a much different answer. Mr. Ahmed explained that we do not have good options today in the Middle East. He also went on to say that the Israelis were every bit as much terrorists as Hamas. Now, this kind of moral equivalency argument serves as the Freudian slip that I'm talking about. If one sees no difference between assassinating terrorists or bombing terrorist strongholds and some thug strapping up a bomb, blowing up a bus that includes innocent women and innocent children, if one can excuse the Palestinians for putting a terrorist government into play, indeed, if one can forget that the PLL and their gangster founder Yasser Arafat basically invented terrorism as we know it today, then this person, in my opinion, is not really renouncing terrorism. Well, we only have about a minute left of the program, so let me spend this minute talking to you about what we're going to do next week. A couple of things next week. First of all, I am going to interview the four Christian missionaries arrested that I talked about earlier on the program. They're going to be on the show by phone, and they're going to give their side of the story. We're going to invite the mayor of that little town in Michigan to come on too, but I don't think he's really coming on, but we're going to invite him. And then I'm also going to read for you next week an article from Front Page. Now, this article came out in 2006, but it predicted very accurately about everything that's been going on from 2006 to 2010. It was about Muslim Brotherhood Project, a chilling blueprint of how Muslims plan to take over the world and submit all of us to Sharia law. Sharia law means that there's no separation between church and state. We go by the Quran. Now stop right there. Stop right there. Before you tell me for the 300th time that most Muslims want to live in peace or that you do not believe in conspiracy theories, keep two things in mind. First, the nominal Muslims who want to live in peace are making zero difference toward the implementation of this thus far successful plan. And two, conspiracy theories are elusive accusations. They are not the same as merely taking somebody at his word. Next week, we're going to take the Muslims at their word, and I'm going to show you just exactly what they're planning to do. But in the meantime, you plan to have a good week. We'll be right back.